was at a Halloween costume party last night, which is not really a thing that we really do or really care that much about. But I'll just have you know that I won. My costume won. It may have involved, I'm not going to lie, I kind of wanted to have pictures on the screen for you right now, but then I was like, eh, maybe that's not really, that's weird. But it did involve, it may have involved some face tattoos. And so there were people there that were like, it'd be really great if that didn't wash off, you know, for church in the morning. And so this morning when a couple of people saw me, they were like, oh, you got it off, huh? Like, so, yeah, sorry. We are in the midst of a message series entitled Money Talks. And the idea is that we're just to talk about money. It's something that Jesus talks about a lot, and I think it's something that it's important for us as Christians and in the church to talk about, and not in a way that's awkward or uncomfortable in some way that it kind of creates us to have this sense of guilt, because that I don't think that that's helpful. And so really just kind of the idea of the TED Talks, I talked about this last week as I introduced the message series, just these talks over a couple weeks about money in different ways. And we spent some time last week laying some groundwork for this series, for these talks. One, not just me talking at you. I try not to really ever do that. But not just me talking, but might also be talks that we have amongst each other, perhaps within your own home, about money. We know that money is a deeply personal thing. We know that statistically money is one of the primary stresses in an individual's life and his or her relationships. And so, and I think Jesus kind of had a clue on this, which is why he talked about money often. We laid the groundwork that this is not, over these talks, this is not ammo for you to pass judgment on another. That we are in a position to only judge ourselves. We know how much we make and we know how much we give away. We know what we need when we need it. We know when we don't need something. We know when it's okay to maybe get that thing because the rest of our life is in balance. And so we can kind of go ahead and get that thing or make that purchase. We don't know that about anybody else. We don't know how much they make. We don't know balance in their lives. We don't know how much they give away. We don't know their hearts. And so we've kind of laid that groundwork that over these talks or through these talks that it's going to be about trying to kind of do some self-reflection and listening for the ways in which God might be speaking to you and to me rather than passing judgment on anybody else. For some of us, we talked last week about how or when the American dream becomes a nightmare. And for some of us, the pursuit of that American dream has become our personal nightmares, and we find ourselves in a really tough spot. With our focus on stuff and getting more, that we have increased exponentially the amount of stress in our lives, which of course is not helpful or healthy, and how we need to be changed from the inside of how we even relate to money and possessions and stuff. I believe that those individuals, and some of them might be us, who live beyond our means, that we find ourselves then living really in a false sense of reality. We have convinced ourselves that this should be where we are, and in fact, it maybe isn't there. And so we have, as a culture, made it a normal, acceptable, even part of the American dream to live above our means. Now, for some of us this morning, the question is not so much like, oh my goodness, this sort of looming financial crisis. But maybe for others of us, the question might be, are we making the most of everything that we have? Or are we finding ourselves being somewhat wasteful because we can afford to? For some of us this morning, there is a looming financial crisis. And we are on the edge of the cliff, going, oh dear. For others of us, that is not the case. And so then the question kind of becomes, what am I doing with what I have? Because frankly, I can afford to waste it. I can kind of throw some money here or throw some money there, and it doesn't really hurt my overall financial outlook or impact on perhaps my relationships or my family. And so then we have to wrestle with that question of what am I doing with what I have, right? It's not unlike dieting. We know the things we need to do and should be doing to lose weight. We know we should eat well. We know we should exercise. And yet, I'm terrible at doing it. Kind of similarly, financially, we know the things to do to have and practice wise money management. And yet, we still fail to practice them. And when you look at the statistics of our country, that becomes quite obvious. Did you know that more than half of Americans, 57% of those of us who live in the United States of America, have less than $1,000 in our savings accounts? 57% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their savings account. 39% of those have 39% of individuals who live in the United States of America have nothing in their savings account. Did you know that less than 50% of all Americans have less than $25,000 set aside for their retirement? The median retirement savings, or those that are in that 50th percentile, for all working age families, which is like 31 to 62 or something, I think is how they described working age individuals or families. The median retirement savings for those individuals, all working age families in the United States, is just $5,000. 45% of the U.S. population, working age population, doesn't have a retirement at all. Now, some of us, again, this morning would be like, well, I'm check, 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 like I'm good. I'm not in the average. I'm not broke. I'm not abusing my credit cards. I don't have creditors calling me and being like, hey, can you pay something on this? Yet somehow, some way, we have kind of just started to live in this way that is really wasteful, some even extravagant. We throw our money away at stuff that we really don't need or even perhaps find value in. And then we start to wrestle with the question, right, if you would call yourself a Christian, then we have to start to wrestle with the question of like, so every dollar then that I spend or that I throw away or that I waste on something else could be a dollar that could be used for something that could have lasting impact, perhaps even eternal impact, right? Because if we're Christians, then we probably should also be thinking in the scope of eternity as well. And so we wrestle then with that. What am I doing with my dollars? Are there ways that I can be using them to make lasting impact? I find three distractions, main distractions, that I think pull us away from sort of that mission or that purpose. Again, especially if you claim to be a Christian, you claim to be one who's trying to follow Jesus, then I believe that we have this other life purpose and mission. And there are three, I think, there are lots of things, but in particular, I think three distractions that pull us off of mission or focus of that purpose. The first one would be impulse buying. Now, again, I may be preaching to only myself this morning, so sorry that you have to sit here for a little bit, okay? Impulse buying, right? We walk into the store, we see this thing that, oh my goodness, I've got to have it, which just a few moments ago, I had no idea that I even needed. Or maybe you're sitting, right? For me, it's not even as much. Again, this is just my personal confession time, and as I preach to myself. It's not even so much like walking into the stores for me, it's the online thing. the ease and convenience of online shopping with like three clicks and it's like going to show up at my doorstep. Like those are the ones that are a struggle for me. That's kind of that's where I get struggle with the impulse. Some people it's the grocery store. Now granted, I'm one of the maybe odd people who, I'm laughing at Carla because I feel like I've seen Carla at the New Meyer. Like we see like, it's like our place to like meet up and hang out. Like I enjoy grocery shopping. Like I like to grow. I am the one who gets groceries for my family, which is funny because, again, think about the impulse buying thing. So Meijer has this agreement with this organization called, or this business called Shipt, where you can do your grocery shopping online, which I'm like, this is amazing so far, right? And then, of course, there's an added fee that you pay that then someone goes and gets your groceries and it delivers to your house. I'm like, this is amazing. And what I've learned, because it's like you sign up for a year. What I've learned is like for the first couple months, this was like a cool thing. And then I realized I started missing going to the store to go grocery shopping. Because I'm weird, right? And so I'm a person who, the impulse thing at the grocery store, not a huge deal. Granted, sometimes I'll like come home with a random couple cans of sardines or something. And then my wife will be like, really? Like, what did you get for meals this week? I was like, I don't know, but I got some sardines. Because I want the zesty pickles. Like, I got them. They were on sale, right? Now, granted, I have a list and I go, but maybe for you it's sales. Like, you see a sale and you're like, oh, I didn't even realize I needed the thing and now it's on sale and, oh, my goodness, I've got to have the thing. A store that I feel like has claimed space on the extended Lipan family would be Kohl's. I don't know how many of you go there or know that store. There's this thing called Kohl's Cash, and they have made it a brilliant thing because they've actually made the majority of my family members think it's actual cash. And so they're like, I got $10 in the mail. I must go spend this $10. I mean, I got it. It's this a way in which sales have kind of tricked us into thinking we need to go buy these things. It have distracted us, right? This impulse buying distracted us by thinking we need this stuff. What would it look like if you and I were to wait 24 hours before we were to make any purchases? Right? Well, there goes my sardines and my zesty pickles. Right, maybe there goes the way in which sales can get you, and then you're like, you know what? I'm gonna just wait 24 hours before I go and spend this Kohl's cash because I got it, and begin to maybe some of that time would allow some discernment. Now, I'm not suggesting that we stop buying stuff, but maybe consider why we're buying the stuff we buy. Distraction number two, eating out. I was doing some research on the cost of living in the city of Indianapolis, and in that list, it kind of lists out like, so a basic lunch in the what it calls the business area district, what I would call sort of downtown, it projects that an average basic lunch downtown-ish would be about $10. Fast food meal average around $7. A basic dinner for two in maybe like some neighborhood restaurant or something on average $40. A dinner for two with an appetizer, a main course, maybe a glass of wine, maybe a dessert, you're now looking at an average of about $70. Now, I happen to have the opportunity to be a family of five. Those numbers don't mean anything to me. As a nation, on average, we eat out between 4 and 5 times a week. So 3 meals a day, 7 days in a week. Of those, roughly 4 to 5 of those are meals that are either eaten out or prepared outside of the home. The average American spends $232 a month eating meals prepared outside the home. So, if you were to do 18 meals a month at about $232 a month total, means the average meal outside the home cost per person is roughly $12.75. And hopefully you can already begin to do some of the math in your own head. Of going, so $12.75 a meal, I eat out one time a week, way to go. I eat out 10 times a week, okay. Distracts us from our life purpose and mission. Am I suggesting that we'd stop going out to eat? No. But maybe just not as much. Distraction number three, vacations. Now, I will say this, that with a child who is now in first grade in the public school system, I'm now starting to understand vacations better than I ever had before in my life. Our family growing up, we didn't really go on a lot of vacations. My nuclear family, me and Ty and our three children, I wouldn't say we really go on a lot of vacations by any means, but there was a flexibility that we had with our schedules when our kids were not in, like, real school. So, like, you know, preschool, daycare, we could be like, oh, our jobs are flexible enough that sometimes it's like, oh, we're going to go on a Tuesday and be back on a Thursday or whatever the case might be. Well, now that our oldest is in first grade in public schools, that means that we can get in trouble if we were like, hey, Theodore, guess what? We're going to go somewhere, you know, we're going to go to grandma and grandpa's house, and you're not going to be in school Wednesday through Friday. Like, now all of a sudden, we have people knocking on our door, and so now I understand, I'm beginning to better understand the idea of vacations and why they happen when they do, and I believe that vacations are desperately needed. Did you know that as a country and as a workforce, we are terrible at taking vacations? Terrible. We leave, I believe it's maybe even billions of hours of PTO unused every year as a workforce in the United States of America. Vacations, so hear me say this, vacations are important and they are needed. I wonder if we might change our expectations of what vacations might be or need to be. If we're increasing our stress to go on vacation, I'm not sure how helpful or healthy that is. Now, as a dad of a soon-to-be 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old, going anywhere with them is stressful. So I get that there is an initial sort of stress that happens when you plan and think about taking family on vacation. Like, that's a normal stress that I think is appropriate with life, right? But if there becomes a long-term added stress because of a vacation that we think we need to do, that is not helpful or healthy. That becomes a distraction, I believe, from our mission and our life purpose if, in fact, then we're like, oh my gosh, this vacation buried us. That seems counterproductive, counterintuitive to what a vacation might be. And so what would it look like for, am I suggesting that we don't go on vacations? No. We need to go on more vacations. What I'm wondering is perhaps if we were to instead consider what it would look like to simplify our expectations of vacations. If you have your Bibles, Luke chapter 15, or if you're taking notes, Luke chapter 15, verse 11, Jesus is telling a story. It's a story that you are probably maybe familiar with. You'll see the words there on the screen. Luke chapter 15, starting at verse 11, I'm reading from the NIV. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his dad, 'Dad, give me my share of all the stuff.'" This is my paraphrase. "And so his dad divided up all the stuff, all the inheritance, and not long after that," verse 13, "the younger son got together all that he had, all of his stuff, all the, you know, it was like, this is all mine, and set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the stuff that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything to eat. And when he came to his senses," which would suggest that there was, at some point he lost them, "when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my dad's hired workers, servants, have enough food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I'm going to set out and I'm going to go back to my dad and I'm going to say, Dad, man, I have sinned against heaven and against you. And you know what? I'm not even worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' And so he got up and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him," which would suggest that perhaps every once in a while, the dad was looking. The dad was kind of hoping, praying, waiting. "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and he was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and he kissed him." The word prodigal literally means one who wastes money. There are a lot of things that you can unpack through the story. The thing this morning that I want to have you be thinking about is this, is that our purpose in life is not our own pleasure. Our purpose in life is not our own pleasure. Are we pursuing a mission, a purpose that is bigger than our personal satisfaction? Are we able to articulate the connection between this purpose and this mission and our faith? We each have purpose, have a mission that is greater than our own self-interest. And the things we do with the things that we have reflects our understanding and our commitment to it. Right now, if you're a Christian, if you would call yourself someone who's trying to be like Jesus, then there's an understanding that the things that we have are all a gift of God, which means that they're really not ours, which means that what we do with the things that God has given us is a way in which we're making a statement about our understanding of the mission and purpose that God has also given to us. The story reminds us that our purpose is not our own self-interest. And what are we doing with what we have to reflect that? Proverbs chapter 23, verse 4. Oh, sorry, I forgot to take the little background thing off. You can kind of see there. "Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Do not trust your own cleverness." Verse 5. "Instead, cast but a glance at all the stuff, at all the riches, and then they're gone. For they will surely sprout wings." I loved when I came across this. I was like, what a great picture. "They will surely sprout wings and then fly off to the sky like an eagle." What's our purpose? What's your purpose in life? What is your life's mission? Is it self? Is it others? And then what can you articulate what that looks like as it relates to your faith and how as it relates to your stuff? Now, there are tons of books that you can read that give all sorts of varying financial advice, planning written by financial experts. Some of you, as you sit here right now, that's what you do. That's your background. So anything that I'm about to say is not perhaps new to you, or certainly new under the sun. It's just my hope is just to be another voice to encourage us to be thinking about and practicing helpful and healthy financial habits. Six principles to consider. Number one, pay your tithe and your offering first. Number two, create a budget and track expenses. Number three, simplify your lifestyle. What does it look like to live below your means as opposed to trying to live above? Number four, establish an emergency fund. Number five, pay off credit cards. Use cash or check cards for purchases and be wise with your credit spending. And number six, practice long-term savings and investment habits. I mean, what would it look like for you and or for your family to set maybe a couple short-term financial goals, maybe a couple mid-range sort of financial goals, and maybe a couple long-term financial goals? And then what would it look like if at least one of those had something to do with your faith? Right? Because either we have to make more money, we have to find ways to make more money, or we either spend less money in order that we might have money to do the things that are important to us. And so we look for ways to simplify. And so I leave you with these questions to be thinking about, praying about, wrestling with, talking, right? Talks. Conversation. Which one do you find more admirable? A person who's living at the edge of his or her means and as a result can't do the things that really matter? Or someone who lives below his or her means and has a meaningful life purpose and mission? Do you admire the one who lives extravagantly or gives extravagantly? And what does that say about your own life purpose and mission, depending on how you answer that? Lord, we give you thanks that you are a generous God and you give us more than we could ever deserve. We confess to you that we're not always good stewards of the things that we have or the things that you give us. And sometimes we have even made our life purpose and mission really more about us than about you or others. And so for that, we confess, we ask and seek your forgiveness, and we pray that you would help to mold us and shape us individuals who find freedom in simplifying the way that we live. Lord, that we would find great joy and freedom and perhaps changing our relationship to money and stuff. Lord, help us to try to minimize the distractions, that we would be mindful of this mission and this purpose that you have given us. That it might then compel us to be stewards of all that you have blessed us with. Lord, help us to be a group of people who are striving to give extravagantly, because we see that trying to live extravagantly is just a chasing after the wind. That too, as the writer of Ecclesiastes says, that too is meaningless. Lord, give us deep meaning.